Hi and welcome to the CDC Understanding Impact podcast. CDC is the UK's development finance institution and impact investor. And in this podcast series, we explore some of the biggest challenges facing developing economies and how the private sector can help overcome them. And in this episode, we're looking at climate change and the impact it's having on businesses in emerging markets today, how it might affect their future plans, and what international investors can do to support a just transition to net zero emissions and resilient economies. We'll hear from founders, CEOs, and senior managers working at companies that CDC invests in, operating in Africa and South Asia.
It's the issue of our times. I think it's taking a very long time to sink in for people around the world.
A sobering fact is that the world's poorest nations and communities, which lack sufficient resources to adapt to climate change, will be the most affected, despite having contributed the least to global warming.
So first up, we spoke to Kihara Maina, the CEO of I&M Bank Kenya, a corporate bank based in Nairobi. Kihara began by discussing the impact climate change is having on his business and the clients they work with.
From a macro perspective, obviously, climate change has accelerated, shall we say, in the past couple of decades in terms of the impact that it is having. And from an organizational perspective, now, we have had to look at, number one, what do we do to, as an organization, to make sure that we don't exacerbate it, we don't make it worse. And from our own footprint, the way we impact the environment, we are taking a better look at how that can be managed. But in terms of how we deal with our customers, ensuring that we understand what impact they're seeing from climate change, right? So if, for example, there will be some who will be looking at opportunities. For example, we have clients who are supporting the feeding of vulnerable populations that are impacted by crisis, whether it's their climatic or whether they are man-made, conflict or whatever. So there are those opportunities that we're then looking at. And of course, they're extending it not just to simply, for example, the production of high quality, nutrient-rich foods that are easily consumed in bulk, but also how you can look at sustainable practices that can help or can enable those communities that are so impacted to actually fend for themselves so that they're not on a dependency curve throughout. But then we also have those whose businesses are being devastated by change, right? By climatic change.
We also discussed the effect extreme weather events such as flooding and droughts have.
Now, that means that we as a business, a responsible citizen, have to then say, okay, so how do we support people who are in crisis? So that means, from our corporate social investment responsibility initiatives, we would support this crisis. But at the same time, we are then looking at customers who get impacted, and we have to now adjust for them. And from other parts of the businesses, looking at the insurance impact and all.
Kihara says that key to addressing climate change effectively are long-term partnerships between investors and businesses.
We are always keen to see that the people who are coming in as international investors are not, shall we say, fly-by-night investors. They're people who you actually invest with over the long run, because changing the impact of climate on our economies is not something that's going to happen over a two-year earnings cycle, right? It's going to have to be long-term. By the time you transform your energy mix as a nation, for example, you're talking about significant projects that are heavily capital intensive and have, multiple year payback periods. So you need your international investor to be somebody who's in for the long haul and understands that the returns will be long in coming, but they'll be worthwhile. But also to then use their platform to help enable investee companies to actually put in the capacity that they require to really address the problems long term. So I like the ESG focus that comes with a lot of international investors. They want, we get these questions always from our investor community. So what are you doing about ESG? How do you make sure that the companies that you work with are compliant and so on? So that's a great focus. And some even go the extra mile. They'll say, you may not be ready to take on this particular area just yet, but we can help you with the technical assistance that will help you do that, right? So provide consultants to help you develop your ESG policies, to do the regular audits that will help you understand all of this. Even go that extra step to say, let's work with your customers to help them, green their businesses. So that's the kind of thing that we are expecting from international investors, rather than just simply looking at emerging markets and say they're high margins and get in and out and done.
Another country affected by extreme weather events recently has been India. In May of last year, Cyclone Amphan hit eastern India and caused an estimated $13 billion worth of damage. iMerit, a technology company that provides data annotation services, was affected by the cyclone. Here's the company's founder, Radha Basu.
Last year in March, we went into lockdown because many in India, in our India centers, which form a bulk of our delivery centers, even though we have 10 centers and they're distributed. March 23rd was lockdown. April and May was a complete shutdown. People couldn't move around. We couldn't get infra in, and things were pretty bad. And our business took, because we couldn't deliver. Our business was fine, but we couldn't deliver. We put in extraordinary efforts to get infra out there, set up all the information security, because you have to get into cloud security, endpoint security, all of those things. Set everything up. We're feeling quite proud of ourselves, told our clients we were all up and running. People were really very positive. Then the worst cyclone in 200 years hit the eastern region of India and affected five of our centers, three very seriously. And it was like, wham. It was that way for our people who lost homes. All of a sudden, all the infra we had set up to work from home, they couldn't work from home. There was no power. Trees had fallen. So we had to commute people into the centers. And it was like the opposite. And then go back and rebuild things. Climate change is also contributing to AI being used. And so we're doing a lot of geospatial work in risk analysis, looking at how buildings are built, how roads are constructed through geospatial imaging. So we're also getting business from that, right? Because AI is being used in climate change efforts. We have to address it. Very important for us to address it globally, address it, and also for companies like us to make sure to have the infrastructure, to have the workforce, to build things in such a way so we can address these kinds of issues. So we have to deal with this and have to deal with how do we make our people feel comfortable and confident and positive in this kind of environment. So yes, is it affecting us? You bet.
And as Radha mentioned there are both challenges and opportunities that come with climate change. One industry that has grown rapidly in recent years is off-grid solar. These businesses typically provide home solar kits on a pay-as-you-go basis to customers on lower incomes. The sector has grown so much that in 2020, it was estimated to be worth around $24 billion. One of the leading companies in this field is Greenlight Planet. This is Naomi Kyoi, who works there. We began by talking about how climate change is affecting the company.
My name is Naomi Kyoi, General Manager, Global Marketing and Digital Business at Greenlight Planet. Greenlight Planet's primary mission is to install, distribute, and often finance decentralized solar power for off-grid and under-electrified homes across sub-Saharan Africa and South Asia. So natural disasters are becoming more intense due to climate change, displacing millions of people from their homes and posing a threat to livelihoods around the world as farmland is damaged by historic floods, droughts, and heat waves. A sobering fact is that the world's poorest nations and communities which lack sufficient resources to adapt to climate change will be the most affected, despite having contributed the least to global warming. A quote by Bill Gates describes this very well. The climate is changing in ways that will be problematic for relatively well-off farmers in America and Europe, but potentially deadly for low-income ones in Africa and Asia. These are the communities we serve. And when such natural disasters occur, it becomes even more difficult to serve the energy needs of this population merely because of operational difficulties during natural calamities. So displaced households, delay in reach to the hard-to-reach areas, delay in reaching the last mile demographic, among other operational challenges that we face.
There's clearly a big opportunity here from the, you know, the green economic transformation that off-grid solar companies can really benefit from. So how do businesses like yours really take advantage of that?
So GreenNet has brought financed off-grid solar to 2.5 million homes in Kenya, Tanzania, Uganda, and Nigeria. But to bring financed grid power to all off-grid homes, we need to create at scale, profitable and bankable solar financing businesses in 20 plus major off-grid markets. One of the biggest barriers is access to affordable local currency debt. Much like a microfinance institution, GreenLight sources debt from commercial banks and institutional lenders, and then on lends that to its clients, which it installs its solar systems to provide purchase financing. But to most typically conservative local banks, this is a very new sector without large-scale proof points in their country. Banks won't venture into financing off-grid solar alone. That's where we can see CDC and other DFIs playing an essential role. So partnering with other local commercial banks to provide the necessary risk mitigation, which allows local banks to venture into the sector. Without it, this chicken and egg problem could hold back adoption of off-grid solar to a large extent. With it, CDC and other DFIs can help jumpstart this lending sector, accelerating clean energy adoption for hundreds of millions of off-grid homes in short order.
And finally, we spoke to one business helping other companies adapt to the effects of climate change. That's Roserve, an Indian firm which recycles wastewater. Prerat Goel is the company's co-founder.
So we're basically a company which has been working towards industrial wastewater recycling. So we help companies across the board who have manufacturing processes using wastewater or using water. To actually recycle all of their wastewater back to process use. So for example, a textile company can actually recycle about 96 to 97% of the water back for reuse in its process. It cuts down their freshwater requirement. Obviously, we look at climate change. It's both a risk for the business as well as an opportunity, obviously, because we're in the space. But let's look at the impact that we see our clients facing today. A lot of our clients you go and ask them the top biggest worries for them, and they do talk about water security as a big risk factor. We have clients who don't operate all around the year because the summer months in India, they don't have the right amount of water, right? We have clients who are telling us that every year they're digging more bore wells to be able to tap in to water availability, which is depleting. The ground levels are going down, so obviously they have to keep digging more bore wells, and the water quality itself is getting more saline, and that's, so all of that impact is there because they're going deeper, they're hitting more saline waters, and that's kind of creating an impact. Even Bangladesh, for that matter, is seeing something similar. They talk about the water table dropping 5 to 7 meters per year, and they're having to dig deeper every year. So there definitely is an issue with respect to water security for a lot of our customers. The other thing you go to see is the sporadic nature of what we're seeing in the climate change. India for this year, again, has had very heavy rainfall in parts of the country, and there's still parts of the country which are going through a drought situation. Now, what that does for you is it doesn't give you water security throughout the year, because there are times when, like currently, water is plentifully available across the country. But the moment we you know, 6-7 months down the line, when we're hitting our summer, you will see that, you know, the water availability for those 3 to 4 months of summer is again going to be very low. So a lot of companies today are preparing, you know, for how can they provide their manufacturing facilities water throughout the year and at a reasonable cost.
And climate change and the erratic weather patterns it has brought with it have meant the company is changing strategy.
If we look at the areas, the regions in which we were looking at focusing our growth and our expansion earlier was, you know, limited to a lot of places where, as you said, water-stressed nations, countries with high regulation in terms of, you know, what they want their manufacturing industry to do with the wastewater. But that is fast changing. You know, we are seeing a situation where, you know, a water comfortable nation can go to water stress in a very short span of time, because we're having these situations where there is extreme rainfall or there's no rainfall. We saw Cape Town a couple of years back when they went through a drought, you know, so all of these situations are something which, you know, is kind of changing our growth strategy. But I think, you know, foremost, what we're looking at is really to kind of understand where we can provide the biggest value. And that's where we see that, you know, the water-stressed nations are probably the best way forward for us. Africa is a big focus for us, because, again, a lot of manufacturing moving into that continent. And the really good, exciting part for us is that a lot of the companies who are investing want to do it right the first time. You know, it's not that they're looking to come in with and putting in a solution where they exploit the resources but not give back to the region. And I think that is what has really changed in the outlook where companies coming into Africa. So that's something which is very exciting for us. We're working with a lot of companies who are setting up systems setting up factories in Africa, and therefore we are looking at helping them from scratch in terms of their water requirement to actually make it sustainable for themselves, whether it's an eco park or it's a green system completely. So that is something that you know, we are focusing on.
So that's pretty much it for today's episode. Hopefully it's given you a better insight into the impact climate change is having on businesses in emerging economies and how they're responding. And if you want to dig deeper into this issue, we do recommend reading the CDC Emerging Economies Climate Report. It's a publication where we surveyed people leading companies across our portfolio to find out how they're addressing climate change and what international investors can do to better support them. You can find a link to the report in the episode description. So thank you very much for listening to today's episode. Thank you to all of our guests for sharing their thoughts with us. We'll be back with a new podcast episode very soon. See you then. Thank you.